Real College Podcast is presented by the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund and is a production of Radio K.
This is Real College Podcast, and I'm your host, Jacob. This week, we're going to focus on the human body and the choices we make with it, from the most natural ways to change it to going under the knife. We'll even look into a choice you can make after you die. All that and more on this week's episode of Real College Podcast. First up, we have Kelly with our question of the week.
What is your coolest tattoo story?
I had a young friend who worked for me, and she had Winnie the Pooh tattooed from the nape of her neck to the top of her butt.
I had a TA who had the tattoo of methamphetamine on him, and he thought it was super cool because it had a chiral center in it.
I designed it while waiting to watch Harry Potter in the theater, and my friend drew it on a piece of napkin. And then I got it while I was 18, and I came home and I showed my mom, and she did not talk to me for the next 3 days.
What is your coolest tattoo story?
One of my good buddies, he only gets tattoos of his favorite album covers. And so he's got a Cat Stevens album, and he's looking to get a Pink Floyd album cover.
My mom has a couple tattoos. It's not really like a crazy story, but I mean, she got a cougar on her leg a while ago, and she had to cover it up for like years because she was a daycare provider.
I don't have a tattoo, so I don't have a story to share other than the first time I was dating my wife when I discovered where her tattoo was. And I was totally surprised by the location, and that's all I can probably say on the radio.
What is your coolest tattoo story?
Well, I don't have a tattoo. And I briefly considered getting one when I was a bike messenger in San Francisco in the summer of 1996. But I couldn't commit to a tattoo, so I grew a goatee instead.
Two friends that I know from back home, twins, who got matching ones on their shoulders, but they misspelled it. And it was a Red Sox tattoo. But they actually got socks spelled out. So instead of S-O-X, it was S-O-C-K-S.
For Real College Podcast, I'm Kelly Bush.
From training healthcare practitioners to advancing our knowledge of modern maladies, the decision to donate your body has the potential to accomplish many things, and it's becoming a more common decision to make postmortem. In 2016, the Associated Press reported an increase in donors at institutions like Duke University, the University of Buffalo, and even the University of Minnesota. Here's Emily Allen with more on Minnesota's body donation program.
Statistics show a rise in people donating bodies to U.S. medical schools. But Angela MacArthur, director of the University of Minnesota Anatomy Bequest Program, says the concept isn't new.
You know, it's been an option. Body donation has been an option at the medical school for a long time. This program's been around since 1901.
The internet has given prospective donors more ways to connect. Through their website and other methods, Angela says about 1,200 people have been pre-registering each year.
Last year was our busiest year. We did have 600 donations in 2016. On the flip side of that, we have had more requests.
And when it comes to requests, Angela says the program handles two different kinds, the first being medical research and clinical training. In 2016, Angela says they supported just over 1,300 requests of this kind.
For example, different biomedical device research, there may be a researcher who's trying to better treat a certain disease, has an idea of a device that may be effective, but needs to apply it to the anatomy of a human body.
The second kind of request is for teaching anatomy in Minnesota degree-granting institutions. Last year, Angela says they supported 210 teaching requests at both the graduate and the undergraduate level.
There is a large undergraduate human anatomy course that happens each spring. Mortuary science majors are another undergraduate level major that do have access to the remains of donors and at the university here, and then kinesiology majors do as well.
Donors can leave their remains to the university in support of education and research efforts, and in-state donors, those who have lived and died in Minnesota, can do so knowing that the bequest program will cover all or most costs associated with the donation process, including transportation and cremation.
We have several other things that we are able to do, that we do, including generating death certificates and some other legal paperwork pieces that have to be done when an individual dies.
Unfortunately, they can't cover everything when it comes to out-of-state donors. The University of Minnesota still accepts those who have died in a different state when it's feasible, but donors are usually warned of additional expenses. The situation is different when it comes to out-of-state schools requesting donors from the University of Minnesota. Angela says the program sticks to in-state research and education, and they have only helped out-of-state schools on two occasions due to special circumstances, one of which included a flooding in Grand Forks.
In those situations, if we are considering supporting education outside of the state of Minnesota, what we've done is we do a process called the reconsent process. So we would contact the donor's next of kin or legally authorized person, and we would request permission to use their loved one's remains outside of the state of Minnesota.
Next of kin and other legally authorized people play a big role in the donation process in more ways than just reconsenting. Asking people to part with their loved one's remains is, in Angela's words, no small ask.
I don't like the word closure necessarily, but it delays the family from completing a cycle, which is that their loved one has died, they've been cremated, they have their cremated remains, and then they do something with the cremated remains, whether it's put in on their mantle, scatter them, or inter them in a cemetery. We understand what we're asking people to do is to delay that closing of the loop, right? And so we want to make sure that we're maintaining a relationship with the donor family.
Every November, researchers broadly talk about the work donors have supported at a service of gratitude held at the Northrop Auditorium, to which donor family members are invited. When family members are interested in how a specific donor has supported research, Angela says they're welcome to call the program. But Angela also says they can't share everything.
Sometimes we feel comments that are along the lines of, can you tell me what did medical advancements my father accomplished by donating? And if you think about medical accomplishments and you think about the advances in medicine, they frequently have happened over time. So I can't go back to a donor family and say, because of your father's gift, he was able to, able to help us cure cancer or anything, at that level.
A single donation might not have the power to cure an ailment as strong and difficult as cancer. But whether it be through undergraduate education, clinical training, or medical research, each donation does make a difference.
What I can say in all honesty is that your loved one's gift helped better understand this.
For more on the University of Minnesota Anatomy Bequest Program, you can check out their website, www.bequest.umn.edu. And if body donation isn't for you, no worries. There's other ways to support research pre-mortem through clinical studies. Studyfinder.umn.edu connects interested volunteers with University of Minnesota Studies in Need. For Radio K's Real College Podcast, I'm Emily Allen.
When people think about choices they can make with their body, plastic surgery tends to be one that pops into mind. Plastic surgery gets its name from the Greek word plastikos, which means to shape or to mold. Plastic surgery, both cosmetic and reconstructive, is a growing industry. According to the American Society of Plastic Surgeons, 1.7 million cosmetic surgical procedures were performed in 2016. That's a 4% increase from their reported numbers in 2015. Here with a story about plastic surgery is Lydia Christensen.
I do a lot of body sculpting or fat grafting, where we liposuction one part of the body and inject it in another for shaping of it. And a lot of those patients have other forms of body art, either tattoos or piercings. And that's just another form of body art, really, is sculpting the human shape.
That's Dr. Covanda, a board-certified plastic surgeon working out of his own practice in Edina. He is affiliated with Abbott Northwestern Hospital and is a recipient of several honors and awards, including Fairview Physicians Association Award for Excellence in Patient Care and Satisfaction.
I've done a hand replant where we, Air Force pilot had sawed off her hand at the wrist at home, doing woodwork and rebuilding wood floors. And she came down and replaced her hand on her body, reconnected blood vessels, nerves, arteries. And she got enough function back that the Pentagon gave her the okay to fly airplanes again, which was her whole life.
His work is a bit different now that he's opened his own practice, Covanda Plastic Surgery. But he still puts in the same hard work and is dedicated to giving his patients the best care.
So we treat all age groups from infants, cleft lip and palate, all the way up through elderly, skin cancers, breast cancers, all kinds of things. Plastic encompasses both reconstructive and cosmetic surgery. So cosmetic tends to be what you see and hear about the most in the advertising and media. But it's really only about half of what we do.
One thing Dr. Covanda says he has to be aware of are patients with body dysmorphia syndrome. This is where patients come in with perceived flaws that are not visible to other people. Because these flaws do not actually exist, Dr. Covanda has to handle their needs accordingly.
Part of our job is treating the whole person, not just the physical, changing the different components of their body, but to help that to match their inner perception of themselves. With body dysmorphic syndrome, the problem is they have a distorted view of what their self is, and so it's hard for us to help them physically. So we try to refer them to the right specialist to help them.
Another thing Dr. Covanda has to be careful of is implants. As a matter of fact, he says up to a third of patients end up removing their implants. With social media and the internet spreading unrealistic implant information, Dr. K takes the time to re-educate his patients about safer alternatives like fat grafting. One common fat grafting procedure he performs is called the Brazilian butt lift, which has increased among his patients at least 13% since 2015.
A lot of celebrities and people in the social media are showing it off all over, so that one's pretty obvious. A less known one, though, is fat grafting for breast enhancement, so we'll use it as a primary augmentation of the breast. With fat grafting, we've initially started using it for breast cancer patients, and now we've been offering it to cosmetic patients for breast enhancement, and it's just been a really good option that patients didn't know was available before.
Even though this is a medical practice, Dr. Covanda says that he sees his job fitting with not only body modification, but also body expression.
The body modification in general has kind of taken its own direction. And I think it's just been recently where those patients have been more accepting of plastic surgery and seeing that as another form of body modification. And so whether that's body modification through tattoos, piercings, or other means or surgery, I see them being compatible.
For Real College Podcasts, I'm Lydia Christensen. With the power to shape and govern your own body comes the choice of whether or not you even want to change it. While exercise and running in particular have become wrapped up in the notion of trying to change how you look, one running group is trying to flip that narrative. Alex Schumacher has more.
We're anti-body modification. We want you to be happy in the skin you're in and just get out there and move around and be happy.
That was Maria Lee, board member for the Runny Yokes, a newly formed nonprofit running group. The Runny Yokes stands against body modification, a pretty radical idea for a group centered around exercise, an activity that seems to be focused on changing one's body. But as Chris Hines and other members of the Runny Yokes explained, the focus really is on making you feel comfortable and developing friends with those who want to make you feel comfortable with who you are as well.
I really enjoy just like supporting everyone and like watching everyone else, because like running is like such a passion of mine, and anyone who knows me knows this. And it's really cool to see people, and I just like get excited about other people running.
Being able to have a community of people who are going to like support you at like whatever level like you want to run at is like pretty special, and like not having it be like oriented toward doing more or doing like longer distances or whatever, but just like celebrating what you can do and like what you want to do, I think is like what keeps me coming.
The group bills itself as being for everybody, and along with that, the center focus of the group is on community building, not on trying to give you a six-pack. Board member Teresa Connolly elaborates.
I think if we're going off the idea of community and not necessarily body modification, but just supporting each other in a health venture, I think something to think about is maybe like mind modification, how to grow as a community, trying to bridge the gap between a neighborhood, so people who are new to the cities, people who are queer, people who are runners, anybody who wants to be a part of this group from our neighborhood as the Twin Cities, and make that into a community. So we want people to feel like they are welcomed, like they can have an experience that's fit, but then also really positive for their minds. So making connections with people if they're new here, making connections with people that have something in common with them, whatever that may be, and then giving them a space in their own city to enjoy the outdoors and then enjoy friends.
Chris Hines hits on why it's necessary to have a running group focus on these principles of body positivity.
Because there are a lot of like body positive like yoga groups, and there are a lot of like other areas, whereas running is like very much like a there's much more of an image of what a runner should be.
Illustrating Chris's point, board members Sam Graff and Corinne Steffens talk about their own struggles with body modification and acceptance in relation to running and exercise in general.
As much as I understand why that's a really important kind of ideal to have, is to kind of like not pressure anybody into some body ideal image. I think running is still wrapped up in something of body modification for me. Like still there's, I directly associate weight and running and maybe not a healthy way, or maybe not a productive way or a real way for everybody. But I think I still really have that in my head, whether or not that's real. So running for me is kind of a still wrapped up in body and shape and kind of identity in that way. And I think this group has been challenging me to have different narratives on body modification and the relationship between activity and health, and whether or not even that's a productive way to think about running at all. But I would say I'm still there in terms of like my personal identity with running, and to try to say like I'm not would kind of be, wouldn't be honest to myself. So that's kind of where I'm at with it.
My knees don't work and my legs don't work, and like I can't run, and there are very few physical activities that I can do without hurting myself. Like it's nice to still be active. And so as for body modification, it's like, well, you know, I would like to obviously fix my knees, but I can't. And so it's nice to kind of have the group that it's like, oh, I have one thing I can do. It's walking, but it's still nice.
Chris summarized the whole of the Runny Oaks message in one cheesy but fairly accurate slogan.
Yeah, I would just reiterate, very anti-body modification. Your body is absolutely beautiful and perfect the way it is. And the only body modification we want is a smile on your face.
The Runny Oaks' website is therunnyoaks.com. And from Real College Podcast, I'm Alex Schumacher.
That's it for this week's episode of Real College Podcast. Hope you enjoyed it. If you did, make sure you go to iTunes and subscribe. Leave us a rating and let us know how we're doing. If there's anything you'd like us to cover, you can definitely let us know that too. Real College Podcast airs every Mondays at 6:30. You can download episodes at radiok.org. Real College Podcast is produced by Emily Allen, Liv Riggins, and Alex Schumacher. Host and managing editor is me, Jake Maldonado Medina. Thank you so much for listening, and tune in next week for another episode of Real College Podcast.